right. So today we're going to cover three main topics that was in the agenda. I wanted to kind of, you know, stay close to what we promised we would talk to you guys about. We want to talk a little bit about why is it important to build a strong brand, how to develop a strategy that really supports that brand, and then eventually what to do when things go wrong, and they will go wrong sometimes. Just a show of hands, you know, like how many of you feel like you're pretty prepared for when a crisis might come up for the brand that you work for, the agency that you work for on behalf of your clients? Do you feel prepared? Raise your hand. We think about this a lot, obviously, you know, especially with a client like Glock. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. There's a lot of things out there that we really try to get out ahead of. But at the end of the day, we really try to think out ahead and be strategic with what a plan is going to be. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about just a really quick brief history of Glock that I think some of you will find pretty interesting if you don't know much about them already. We're just going to cover three things that you may or may not know about Glock that kind of just talks a little bit about why it is a pretty strong brand. And it does actually make, from a social, strategic, and response standpoint, makes things a little bit easier when bad things in the world do occur. And that's really important. So the first talking point to talk a little bit about, and I'm going to let Kai kind of give a little bit more detail, is that Glock is in 65% of law enforcement in the United States.
So just real quickly, does everyone know what Glock is? Sometimes I take this for granted because I've been in this industry for a very long time. We manufacture firearms, specifically handguns or pistols. We don't do any long rifles or ARs or any other platforms at this point, just handguns. We're celebrating our 30th year this year in the United States. And in 86, when we were introduced, law enforcement was our way into the American market. Reason being that the climate of the violence was heightened, and law enforcement officers used to have, at that time, they were armed with six shooters, a revolver, which means you have six rounds. Well, they were being attacked by gangs of many, many people, and law enforcement officers were falling left and right. Violence was going up very high, and our platform, and we'll talk a little bit about the engineering and how it revolutionized the firearms industry forever. This was one of the ways it did that, is that our firearm that we introduced at that point, the G17, held 17 rounds. So you went from six rounds to 17 rounds, and that gave law enforcement officers a much better chance of being effective on the streets. Today, it's actually higher than 65%. That's kind of our safe number, but 65% of law enforcement officers in the United States, and that's not including military, which Glocks are standard in, hold our firearms because of the reliability, the safety, and the efficiency.
Yeah, so back to the strength, you know, I mean, if law enforcement is using the product, you know, especially people that don't know a whole lot about handguns and firearms, that's pretty trusted authority, right? So that gives us a lot of strength in the brand. This may be a surprise to some of you, maybe not everybody, but that's weird. Hollywood has actually played a pretty big role in that. Does anybody recognize the movie here? Die Hard. He looks so young there. So one of the biggest misnomers and misperceptions actually happened in this movie, and many others actually. But I'll also let Kai go into more of the detail because there's actually a really interesting story behind it.
So this is also early 80s. This is Glock is brand the new kid on the block. This is very different from everybody's mom and pop pistols that were on the market and that you grew up with hunting. So we had a lot of things to overcome. One last thing about the law enforcement. They were a great resource for people who... a trustworthy resource for people who wanted to get into buying firearms. They would ask a cop, what do you use? Or the cops use it, so it must be good enough for me. So on to Hollywood, this movie actually had a couple, created a couple hurdles that early on in Glock's career that we had to get over. One was he made a comment, what was it exactly, the plastic pistol?
The polymer pistol can mm-hmm. pass through an airport scanning device without being detected.
Right. So being the new kid on the block, no one knows that that's not true. So in fact, Jason and I were talking about this the other day. He didn't know that it actually went to this extent. One, it's false. But we were more interested in not addressing it because it was in the movie. We were interested in addressing it because we had to. TSA is coming to us, government entities are coming to us, there's a huge lawsuit. Is this true? If it's true, then, you know, this could have really been the end of our industry in the U.S. if it could go through
airports
security. And security and things like that, which of course it couldn't. It was totally false. But you can imagine what we had to overcome from this silly little comment in a movie, which got people thinking, and they were uneducated, and we were the new kid on the block. So, you know, we actually had to address that legally. And so that was a huge crisis that could have, you know, had it not been understood, or had we not been able to do a good job of overcoming that, really stunted our growth in this industry. There was a couple other.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, this is obviously a really long time ago, right? This was back in the 80s, and that was way before social media. So this just kind of puts things in comparison, I think, a whole lot about, again, you know, how Glock kind of came to be, how it became a really strong brand. There's this facade ever since Hollywood really got a hold of, you know, Glock and started getting used in other movies with Tommy Lee Jones and all that, about like, wow, that's an easy word to remember. I know that brand. It's that the cops all have it now. I trust it, right? And it's also a really good product, which is the last point that we're just going to touch on really quick. Because at the end of the day, it's really an amazing product that's got a lot of engineering behind it. And that's what the fans really are all about. And we're going to talk about that in more detail. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
On the product itself, as far as revolutionizing the firearms market, our pistols have 34 parts. In comparison to other firearms, other pistols, they have 2, 3, 4, 5 times that many parts. So we're talking about ultimate efficiency. We're talking about really, truly revolutionizing the market. We have a third to a fourth less parts, moving parts, than any other pistol. It's a ballistic polymer. Everything before this is the first ballistic polymer that actually worked in the market. And, you know, that's where the whole plastic thing and where we had the issues about the airport security came in. This ballistic polymer is actually stronger than steel pound for pound. So that's significant. That goes into the engineering as well. But the biggest thing we had to address is, if you're familiar with firearms at all, you'll notice this doesn't have an external safety, something to cock it with or something to push that makes it not fire. So we actually have 3 safeties, and there was a big, big PR issue with people saying Glocks don't have safeties. I don't trust Glock because they don't have safeties. They're used to their you know, father's pistol that have the external safeties. We still see this come up from time to time with traditionalists, let's call it, but we don't see it nearly as often. We've done a fantastic job over the last 3 decades really focusing on the safety of this pistol, and Glocks are now known as the most safe and reliable pistol, hands down, on the market. So we've really trumped that. We tie that into every single campaign that we have and tie it into confidence, and that's really, Jason's going to go over a couple different case studies on that, but we actually have 3 safeties, just not the one that you're used to. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now that you guys know just a little bit about the history of Glock, maybe some of that stuff you knew, maybe some you didn't, you know, we're going to talk more about the social strategy now. So whenever we get started with a playbook or, you know, some type of a way to figure out, okay, what do we need to do for this brand? How are we going to weave in all the things that are going to ladder up to the objectives? How are we going to make sure that social is doing its part? We always kind of take a gut check, especially when we're in an environment with a firearms manufacturer that we feel like, you know, we really need to be prepared. So we do this kind of internal gut check, and this is, you know, a little bit ethereal, but we do ask ourselves these questions, and these do lend to more questions that go through a discovery period that turn into an actual finished strategic directive. So, you know, we've already talked about how strong is the brand. You know, I mean, obviously your tactics and the things that you do from a content perspective and posting and how you talk to your audience and how you respond to your audience, it depends on how strong that brand is. Obviously, if it's a strong brand, you've got a little bit of an easier job ahead of you. If it's not, then buckle up, right? And that, now you have to really kind of come at it from a different angle. We also ask ourselves, how loyal is the audience? we started working with Glock back in 2011, when there were about 250,000 fans. And the audience was already loyal, but they just weren't used to hearing from Glock. They weren't used to Glock getting out there in the world and saying stuff on social media. But we had to really quickly leverage how we want to get more loyalty from them. And 2 years later, in 2013, we launched a loyalty slash online community called Glock ID for people to sign up for. And, you know, honestly, we did that for a few reasons, but one of the reasons is that we got tired of renting our audiences from Facebook and Twitter and other social media networks. We wanted to try to provide a better experience for gun and Glock enthusiasts to talk about, you know, hey, I went to the target range, you know, I went to the practice range, and here's an upload of my target. My groupings are to the left a little bit. Why am I doing that? Somebody answers their question. You know, hey, you might be pulling the trigger a little bit too hard. You know, why don't you try this? All of this community of questions and answers and training modules and gamification that we've added to this community has turned into a community of 100,000 members and growing. So we're really proud of that. We were trying to find always new ways to leverage that audience. But first, it all started with the question, how loyal is our audience and how can we take that to the next step? When it comes to crisis management, we always ask ourselves, how organized is the team? This can mean a lot of things, but obviously if you're dealing with a very complex environment, Beverly Walker the other day talked about MGM Grand and how she's managing 20 different properties and she's got legal and compliance and all these different areas to go through. You know, that's gonna take a long time, right, to really get that team organized. And we always start there with that question and we try to put together a really good approach as far as that goes. For Glock, you know, there's not that many people involved. It works out pretty well. We're gonna go into the details here, but PR and social have to work very close together and we have to be, have to have the right tools in place in order to know what's going on and we're listening. And that's where we get into technology. How is technology helping? We don't go for free tools. I don't trust free tools, especially when the stakes are this high. So, you know, best advice here is that, you know, if you don't feel like technology is helping, go ahead and plan a budget and plan that way ahead of time and set client expectations or set your own expectations or your boss's expectations that we do need to invest in some type of a listening tool or we do need to invest in some type of a monitoring tool. And I'll show you guys a little bit of about what we monitor for Glock and how all that looks here in a second. So I mentioned the playbook earlier. We created a battle-tested playbook that's kind of a living and breathing document for about 3 years now. And as a part of our crisis management plan, we have an escalation path. It all begins with the community manager. They see the problem. They then reach out to what we're calling an internal SME, which is a subject matter expert, which is on the Glock side of things. And if we need to, and we feel like, okay, we may have a problem here, we may not, based on something that popped up, you know, our community manager is not a gun expert, okay, a firearms expert. But the point of contact that we have within our organization over at Glock is. So we have to go through a bit of validation, and that internal SME is a very important part of our escalation plan when a potential problem might arise. And then, once it's been validated by the internal SME, then we get into, you know, a selected, very small group of people, crisis response team, to figure out exactly what we need to do to respond to that. In many cases, it's no response at all. And that's actually probably more the rule than the exception. We also look at it through here. Like I said, we first validate it, then we respond, and then we escalate. So those are the people. This is the process. Validation is important because obviously we can be running around with our hair on fire all the time when there's really not a problem to begin with, and we certainly don't want to worry our client with something that they don't need to be worried about. So that's a big role that Swarm plays for Glock, among a few other things. The response is still key, though. Deciding whether to respond or not respond, if it's something that is within what we call our response matrix, it's basically just preempting every possible question that we could potentially be asked so that our community manager or managers is equipped with a good response. And that is another living and breathing breathing document that gets added to and amended and edited over time. We still want to be fast to respond, but we don't want to respond to the wrong types of conversations. And then if we have to, we escalate, and that's where it gets into that crisis response team piece. You know, now it's basically me talking to Kai and saying, okay, you know, we have a problem here. You know, this thing happened in this place, people are saying this, you know, we need to do something. To give you an example of that, I've got a few interesting things that have kind of happened over our relationship over the last several years with Glock. You know, things that have occurred that have caused this like crisis response team to kind of jump into action. So we're going to cover that here in a second. But just a final point about the playbook here. Again, content strategy. You guys hear this all the time during this event, right? you know, we call them content buckets. You know, we are always trying to figure out what the right dosage of content per topic is based on what's happening in the real world at this time and what, you know, Glock is trying to achieve as far as their objectives go. It's usually some type of a blend of Glock updates, Confidence, which is a longstanding multi-year campaign that Glock has been doing now, Glock Talk, and Enthusiast and Leaf law enforcement and military engagement as well. Brand voice and tone is self-explanatory. You know, whether we're responding to a crisis or not, we're always keeping that same level of tone. You're not going to see Glock use emoticons. You're not going to see Glock use exclamation points. We're not going to say, hey, guys, hope you're having a great day, Throwback Thursday. You know, it's not...
It's not very Austrian.
It's not very Austrian, yeah. So it's, you know, I always like to say, you know, for Glock, when people were so, like, happy that Glock started to join the conversation a few years back, it was about kind of like, you know, like when Glock kind of came into the room, everybody kind of was like, hush. It was like, oh my God, they're talking to me. This is great. So we're actually just trying our best to still kind of keep that, like, feel, you know. It's like, hey, Glock said something cool, you know, and it's a responsible thing they said, but also very approachable and friendly. So that brand voice and tone lends itself a lot to, even when we have crises, to respond or not respond to. We have to maintain that. So anyways, crisis timeline. This one's kind of fun. When we started working with Glock, it was about 2011, about 250,000 fans across all channels. Actually, it was just Facebook at the time. So since then, we've, you know, of course, gone into Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, experimenting with other platforms as well. And over this time, you know, there have been events, and some of these that, you know, probably should jump right on the screen, you know, that we all know very well, that have happened, that have been very unfortunate events. Whether tied to the specific product that Glock sells or not, they were horrific, awful, terrible things. When these things happen, in most cases, out of respect, and this is part of the crisis plan from the very beginning, is that we take a vow of silence. We don't give the community or anybody outside of the community that, who sees our posts, something to respond to in a time where something horrible happened in our world today or the day after that. So what happens a lot is that we will, any kind of scheduled posts, any kind of a promotion that we might have going on at the time, and this doesn't, you know, this doesn't indicate like all the little things that sometimes happen, this is kind of the bigger stuff, we shut the ads off. We stop the scheduled posts and we be quiet for a while out of respect. We, of course, early on found that that is very effective because it doesn't give people to respond to. It doesn't give somebody another reason to respond or, you know, make hateful comments or whatever to the brand. What's also interesting, though, is over this course of time when certain things have happened, because we do have a loyal audience and we have been investing and pouring a lot of time into Glock ID and ways to actually really give back to our community, we have seen amazing examples of our community coming to bat for the brand, right? And it's because of how strong the brand is. It's because what we're doing, I think, on social. It's because their belief in the product is a good product. These are people that trust their lives, you know, with Glock security officers, you know, you name it. People that decide to, you know, conceal carry every day that they live. So we take that very seriously, and we also respect that in a big way. So when we see fans kind of always coming to bat, That's great, and actually, that's not any reason for Glock to get involved in that conversation.
We might be on step 2.5 of our crisis plan and realize that our fans and our advocates have taken care of it for us, and at that point, We realize that it's actually been taken care of and we don't need to address it. And that plays into, I think, the next case study you're going into is we all know that brands can't tell their customers who they are anymore. We can't tell people what we want them to think. Who we are as a brand or what other people are telling each other. And that's what we're calling our advocates. And we, part of the reason that we get that strong advocacy is because of the authenticity that we've been handling these issues and the way that we use social and PR together simultaneously to address these issues or not address these issues. Mm-hmm. Our advocates take care of it for us. And sometimes it really blows our mind. Well, we're sweating, we get there, and we look, and we're, okay, well, everybody has completely just cleared it. With the Earth Day post is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue. So this Earth Day post was really interesting. So, you know, as a marketer, you know, it's kind of your dream to get featured on Adweek. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, this is amazing, but I hope it was for a good reason, right? Mm-hmm. So I was leaving the office one day for my son's soccer practice, and I got a call from my buddy. He's like, hey, man, congratulations. You got featured on Adweek today. And I mean, my blood ran cold. I had no idea what he was talking about. I had no clue. I was nervously, like, not paying attention to my son during a soccer game and trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And I found this Adweek or Adfreak post. Glock shoots first, ask questions later with a strange Earth Day tweet. So we did some user-generated content on this one because, and we've done this before, actually. We've done this every year. And what people outside the industry don't realize is that there was actually a little kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of joke behind this post. And to Kai's point, you know, I think, you know, whoever posted this article, you know, kind of shot first, asked questions later themselves, and didn't really understand what we were trying to do, because after all, we do know our fans, we do know our community, and they actually, you know, thought this was a pretty kind of cheeky post. That pistol is a flat dark earth, or FDE pistol. So it's well known in the industry that the colors of that pistol that are used are called flat dark earth. So we said, hey, happy Earth Day, right? So this was one of those instances where I'm like nervous at the soccer field. I'm like, okay, do I need to go to the crisis response team? Like, what's going on? But I waited. I watched the comments like literally within 30 minutes to an hour to hour and a half after this was posted. I started seeing the comments roll in, and things like this started showing up. The color is flat dark earth, so they tried to do it for Earth Day. It's for the color, flat dark earth, or this one's my favorite. At least anybody a little bit familiar into firearms would get the reference instantly. FDE stands for flat dark earth. It's a standard color. So a great example, the first time I've seen, you know, the fans kind of come to back up Glock outside of social media channels, but actually on a pretty well, heavily popular publishing website. So we didn't do anything. We didn't need to. We felt like we were already justified. And not only that, I don't have a screenshot of it, but the author of this post actually made a, you know, a little additional post saying, you know, oh, yeah, we now realize.
My bad.
Yeah, my bad, basically. Ha. So anyways, it was great exposure, one way or the other on the FDE pistol. We never really looked up the sales data after that one, but I trust that it sold a ton of product for you. So anyways, I just wanted to share with you guys, we're about out of time here, but want to keep some time for questions, but this is just a couple screenshots of the monitoring tool that we use, and no offense to the sponsors here, I know we have other like social intelligence sponsors. This is Nuvi. We use Nuvi to track all the conversation that goes on around Glock and Glock competitors. It helps us understand how we stack up against all of them in the conversation. It alerts us. It lets us know when the tricky keywords, things like that, that we're really looking for, might be, you know, going in a bad direction. And then this one's a really good one too. It just kind of lets us know that whenever we post or when somebody else posts and uses the term Glock in their post, how many connections there are, positive or negative, to that post. And it allows us to see very visually what really is going on so we can make quicker decisions, right? So I want to leave you guys with just a few key takeaways instead of talking about all this high-level stuff. As you know, I think it's important. It's great to understand kind of where we're coming from. But first and foremost, know your brand, your audience, and your objective, right? Because that's going to drive everything else that you plan, whether it's for crisis or whether you have a brand that just isn't really, you feel like, made for social or something that might be controversial, it becomes even more important then, right? Trust, alignment, and communication are critical for success. I do not think we could be equipped to do a good job if it wasn't for the fact that Kai trusts me and trusts our team, and vice versa. I trust her. We're able to get a lot done together because we have that alignment as well. And that requires, you know, planning, it requires process, but it really requires trust.
I actually have a little desk set up in their office, too. So we work very closely. It's Kai's little workspace, and it's closer to my apartment, which is nice. But we work PR and social. I mean, it's just not the same as it used to be. It's their hand in hand. It's the same exact thing, perhaps with different angles. So if I'm doing any sort of initiative, positive, whatever it is, if I don't have my team involved at Swarm, it's not something that's going to go through successfully on its own.
Agreed. Anticipate the tough questions. I mentioned this earlier. One of the ways that we anticipate those tough questions for us is a response matrix. It's basically a spreadsheet, nothing too fancy, but it's a living, breathing document that we equip our community manager with so that he or she can respond intelligently, in the right voice, make ourselves look good in the process. And then last but not least, you know, as I mentioned, you know, you gotta ask yourself, how is technology helping? You've got to find the right measurement and monitoring tools that are prerequisite for success. It's just absolutely mandatory. You know, and there's really no free tools that I'm aware of out there that I would trust. You know, you have to really just plan on whatever that is that you need to invest in, you know, whether it's a smaller platform or a more enterprise level platform. and count on that, because that's going to really help you look good in the long run. So that is it. That's all I had for you guys today.
We'd love to take questions if anybody has any. Yes?
You want to?
So Jason's really the head for Swarm, and I'm the head for Glocks. So I represent the whole marketing department in this regard. Jason's team has an eye on what's going on with social, and so do I, but that's mainly their main function. So they see things first, and they immediately alert us. And then depending on what it is, so that's actually how small the team can be, and it can be larger from that. If it's a technical thing, then I'm going to go to the head of my tech department, engineering tech, and bring in who needs to be involved from there. But that's really, truly how small that initial crisis team. If it's a legal thing, then, you know, we'll get our general counsel involved. But the initial team is just our feet on the ground and the two of us. We're both really lucky that our companies trust us very much, that we have an eye on, and that's imperative. They trust that we have an eye on the situation. If they see something, I get emails all the time, did you see this, did you see this? So everybody's kind of feeling it out, but other than that, it's nothing official. So we don't have too much of an issue of people stepping in. That hasn't been a problem for us.
Yeah, I mean, back in this time, that was more of an issue, like, because we were, I was trying to build a lot of trust, and, you know, we were just trying to figure out, like, you know, how to get all this right. And to Kai's point, I mean, we've been partners long enough, actually, it's made it really easy. If other people outside of that crisis response team get involved, that means something must have, like, really bad must have happened. And luckily, that doesn't happen.
In fact, at that point, PR, a role of PR as an inside Glock position didn't exist. So that was another reason why it was a little bit more confusing back then, that there wasn't somebody that was actually in charge of it from the Glock side. Safety, education, and training are the three components of confidence that we put into everything. So you'll see confidence in our ads, but that are represent, it might be confidence in its demonstrating safety, it might be confidence in its demonstrating training, but confidence is our major overlining campaign, and that's where you'll see it in ads. But as far as everything else, it comes down to education and awareness and really sort of grassroots, really. One of the prep on, Jason, can you go to the key takeaways real quick?
Yeah.
I just wanted to anticipate tough questions. This is really difficult, especially if you've been, sometimes being in the industry for a long time can be your worst enemy because you're a little bit too close to the situation. This one has been a lot easier for me. When I say easy, I mean really tough. Because I'm a born and raised Seattleite, millennial woman, raging hippie, who's gun-toting. So back home, nobody knows what to do with me. Now I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and they're like, okay, she likes guns. What's up with the hippie stuff? So it's really fun, but what that's allowed me to do over the last 10 years is have conversations with both sides, which I don't actually believe in because I'm representative of both. Very naturally, I've been able to have very educated debates with people from different sides, and they ask me tough questions. People talk to me as if I work for the NRA. I don't work for the NRA. I work for Glock. We're a handgun manufacturer. We are not a political entity. But to get somebody to understand that, perhaps somebody from Seattle or somebody, and I'm overgeneralizing, but you get the point, is that it's very difficult for people to understand, and that's really helped. That kind of just talking to people has really trained me in how to anticipate these kinds of tough questions. Yeah, keeping your audience, your target audience in mind is always really important. If we're going for non-shooters, to make them new shooters, we're going to go about that very differently. The Flat Dark Earth one was obviously just a sort of silly, fun social post where it was a great example of somebody outside the industry picking up on that, and we got great coverage from it. And I actually like their headline, scratching Glock, scratching their head. You know, I thought that was kind of cute, but it scared us because we were like, oh, okay, well, that was taken very negatively for people outside our audience. We didn't consider that because it was on our Facebook page, Twitter, we meant that very specifically for our audience. So that's a great question. That was very targeted to our audience. And they came to our rescue, actually. Our audience isn't necessarily an ad freak demographic. I mean, we didn't realize there would be that crossover either. And so you could say that we were unprepared for that. And luckily our advocates, because we had such a strong brand, since we started doing all of this social and PR for the last 5 years or so, take care of that for us.
Yeah, and another part of that too is that if we're reaching, so we would have never boosted or, you know, ran a Facebook ad against a post like that to go outside of our audience. That would just be something we would never do. Now instead, what we would do, and which we do often, is we use ads to reach people outside of our demographic with the confidence messaging, or, you know, with the messaging that is more about safety. And, you know, those types of things, of course, work much better with a non-endemic audience than an endemic.
Right. And the confidence campaign is great because people just want to see themselves represented, and that's how you get new shooters. So one of my favorite ads, and it is stereotypical and doesn't seem that fundamental, but it really is. It's just a woman jogging. You don't even see a pistol, but you assume she's carrying one because it's a Glock ad, and she's just stretching. She's going for a jog, and it says, confidence, it's what you carry. Well, she's just jogging midday. There's nothing threatening about it, and you assume, and, you know, how many of us can imagine ourselves in that situation? She's just jogging. We all should do that. But, you know, you can see yourself doing that. And so it takes the fear out of it. And it really welcomes that maybe non-shooter audience. Or we do a really great job with the Scholastic youth shooting. You know, you see, you know, we always say if mom's shooting, everybody's shooting. So I actually went on the Lifetime channel a couple years ago. We were doing a piece on firearm safety in the home. And it was with our spokesperson, Arlie Ermey, the gunny, if anybody's seen Full Metal Jacket. Really? Oh, okay. So the drill starts. So he's been with us for about 12 years. So he and I were doing a piece on the Lifetime channel. And I said, hey, it's a great way to change up date night. And we got so much positive feedback from that. The Lifetime channel, you don't see guns on TV, period. Gun manufacturers on TV, period. And we got on the Lifetime channel. Way to go, ladies. So it was a really, really cool, positive experience.
Yeah. I would say some of our most loyal fans are within Glock ID. We've even seen at the annual NRA annual meeting, which moves around from time to time, that's where the fans go, you know, and Glock has a presence there with all the other firearms manufacturers. That's a great way to put it. Absolutely. And what we've also seen that's been pretty interesting is, you know, like in real life relationships, you know, form from people meeting each other on Glock ID, you know, and meeting up at events and forming their own little, you know, meetups and all that kind of stuff. It's great to see.
Yeah, we'll see them meet up at shows together. They meet in person. They've been communicating. It's basically Facebook Glock Forum, essentially,
yeah,
is kind of the setup. But to answer the first part of your question, it wasn't deliberate to create advocates. It was like, hey, where can we bring all of our people together to where they can talk to each other, mm-hmm, and have a resource for all things Glock that's Glock official? Because there are a lot of all things Glock that are not Glock official. And so it was, and to know that you have the power to do that, that you have a strong customer base to know that we could do that, was really fundamental. 100,000 members. I mean, that's pretty significant for one brand.
Yeah.
So we want to give time for the next person to set up. So thank you all for coming.
Yeah, thanks, guys.